Welcome to the Nth Venture.
This week, I speak with the wonderful Tim McConaughey. I am always excited to talk to someone that's been in business for over a decade, and he's been doing it like no one else in the world of book publishing. And I think you might be very interested in what he's doing these days. We're talking about an industry that has undergone an enormous amount of disruption, change over the last decade, and Tim's had a front row seat to it all. I think you'll really enjoy this one like I did. Please give it up for Tim.
Well, Tim, thank you very much for joining the Nth Venture Pod. I think this is the first one from the new office here, so it's interesting. Usually I've been at home doing this. Welcome, Tim. I'm excited to talk about Izzard Inc. and wonderful Mr. Tim McConaughey. So what I usually like to ask folks to kick it off is, you know, if you had to think back to, and I know you've been at Izzard Inc. now, you know, 12 years, if you had to think back to kind of something maybe earlier on in your life or maybe in your childhood that kind of spurred you towards the path of creating it, is there anything that kind of immediately comes to mind, you know, just how you grew up or any event or person in particular?
You know, I think, thanks for having me here. I really appreciate it. And you guys do a really great job. So thanks for getting out there, sharing people's stories. I think that's what matters. I really loved business. I think from just a young age, that's where it was at. It was business. It didn't matter what it was. It was just business. And I kind of fell into publishing and this kind of business. You know, I be truthful, I couldn't get a job. And so that's where this kind of all led. It felt like a huge barrier at the time, but I didn't know what was opening up.
The world of publishing, you know, has changed so much. I mean, you guys are doing the latest and greatest in AI and all kinds of interesting things. But I think when you first started, it was more or less one family, you know, with a book they had to get out. What was it like in those very early days?
You know, when I was just getting rolling, this was just really meant as maybe a side hustle. You know, what could I do just for some extra income? So I was like, well, if we could make a few extra $100 a month, that's all that matters. I mean, it started from a Wall Street Journal article about ebooks taking off, and then it's just grown from there. You know, I was able to find a family and the author was dead. So it's like, okay, well, we have nothing to lose here. So here you go, you know, and we started selling hundreds of books, you know, a week. And it was like, hey, this is legitimately working. And so it kind of muddled through there for a while. You know, I had to learn publishing. I jumped into every single aspect of publishing myself, and I tried to do it and understand, you know, exactly why it happened, the whys and the hows. And then the more I got into it, the more I realized I wasn't very good at it. And then I'd fire myself, but I'd find somebody else who could do the job. And that's just kind of how things really evolved. And, it's been tough. It's been difficult. But now where I see publishing going, I'm excited. You know, I get this thing. Sometimes I pay for something with my business credit card and they go, book publishing? Is there any publishing? Is publishing even a deal anymore? And I want to just say, you don't understand, you know, where this is going and what's going to happen in the future of publishing. But it is bright. And it is going to be amazing. And I'm, you know, I'm excited to be in the industry.
Yeah. So talk to me about some of the, you know, you've been in this game for a long time. You know, what are some of the things that have changed and some of the things that make you, you know, excited for the future?
I think what's changed. So if you look at publishing, you know, you've got traditional publishing, which about 500,000 to 1 million books are published through traditional methods. If you want to get signed by Penguin Random House, or, you know, we call them the big five publishing agents, you basically have to have a literary agent. So you have about a 1 in 1,000 chance of picking up a literary agent. And that agent is kind of a gatekeeper who then shops it to 5 or 6 other agents or acquisition editors at the big publishing houses. So they're out there saying, okay, hey, we've got this. You know, basically your chances of traditional publishing are very, very low, especially if you don't have a platform of 25,000 followers. And then you get into the realm of self-publishing, where anybody can just upload their Word document to you know, Kindle Direct Publishing and Amazon, and it's out there. But what you're seeing is there's a huge gap. There's nothing in the middle, and that's where we try and come in. And that's where I'm seeing a lot of promise. You know, how can you hire the same people that work at Penguin Random House? How can you test and see the viability of your book? And that's where I'm excited on the front end for authors. You know, that's what they see. As a business owner, what I see on the back end is how we're able to put our processes and procedures in place that gives structure, that we're able to take things from the author's head and we're able to translate them to the cover designers, the editors. We know where things are going to go. But we've automated a lot of the back end process, and that's what I get excited about. We've been able to cut a lot of, I just say tedious tasks, you know, with automation. Everybody has everything in front of them when they start the job. All the freelancers, we've built this to like a gig economy type of a deal, where authors get to pick their own team from two or three people. They get to pick and have a say in who they want. And those people come in, they know the processes, they know how we work. And it flows really well. And now you're starting to look at AI and what's going to happen there. It's just fascinating. There's been a lot of talk about AI. It's coming. It's going to be amazing. But we're still a little ways off from it truly revolutionizing, you know, publishing and the whole industry.
I mean, there's been some interesting applications. I know we've got one, but mostly what it's done is revolutionized LinkedIn. Like everything you read about all day long is ChatGPT. I think it's hilarious too. Like everybody has an opinion, right? On ChatGPT. I just wish that it's just funny because there are people that spend their entire lives working AI machine learning. And I'm curious how they feel. I mean, it's got to be like someone on LinkedIn, like their opinions about plumbing and like they're next to a toilet and whatnot. It's like their first day doing it. I mean, that's what it's got to feel like as you're developing this thing. Obviously, you're kind of doing so in the second half of the 20 years of Amazon. So, I mean, they're a huge 1,000-pound gorilla in the space. I didn't even know until recently they picked up Goodreads. You know, what's it been like living in the world of Amazon?
We like Amazon. They sell a lot of our books. Okay. So we appreciate them from that perspective. The big hole in the market is that if you want to write a book, you really have to focus on who your supporting cast is. Self-publishing isn't doing something by yourself. It really isn't, because you need to surround yourself with the experts in the industry. Just like, you know, venture capital, things like that. You want to surround yourself with a good team. You don't want to go at it alone. But too many people just put their books out there. They put their story out there, and it's not very good. Can I say that? Most of the stuff is just garbage. If you go to a traditional press, they're going to take you through two or three editors that know how to get the most out of an author. And so, yeah, you got 2 million people who self-publish every year, but the amount that actually is really good content is next to nothing. And so that's where I see them as helping. They sell our books. They do a good job. But all they're doing is just collecting a whole bunch of stuff that, for the most part, really needs work.
Yeah, I got to imagine this is one of the biggest like power law industries ever. You know, just an extremely long tail. If you have advice for folks beyond just kind of surrounding yourself with the right people, how does somebody do it this day and age, you know, successfully if maybe they don't have, you know, a huge following already or able to get in with, you know, the big publishing houses? You know, I mean, what's the good, bad, and the ugly of going down this route?
I think it takes a lot of work, and you can't kid yourself. It's going to be tough. It's going to be difficult. Anything in life isn't easy. There's no quick way out. And so you'll want to surround yourself and pick people and have the attitude that I'm going to put this out there and I want people to pick it apart before it's published. You know, I want people to tell me the pros, the cons, where there are holes, where it doesn't make sense. And as an author, you've got to ask those questions. You can't just surround yourself with yes people or yeah, this will do really good. You know, you're going to make a lot of money here. No, it's just with everything else in life. You know, you want to know what the true hardcore facts are. That actually helped create what we call our manuscript assessment and action plan. We have two independent editors review the books that come in. And the reason why we do this is just for that. We want to see what feedback and how the author takes the feedback to see if this really is a viable option for the author. So how do you take feedback? How are you structured? You know, we call it a tough love session. We can sit there and we can, you know, we tell you it's going to hurt. It's not going to be all roses. Take a couple days, yell at us, be mad. But when you're done, we're going to have a meeting with you and our lead editor. We're going to go through the results and then we're going to create an action plan and we're going to be solution focused. And we're going to be able to say, hey, this is where you're going. This is what you need. And this is how you're going to have a viable product. So probably the long answer to that question, huh?
Yeah. I imagine on the editorial side, that has got to be a very fine art of working with authors. I can't even imagine. It's kind of like, I mean, that's like, it's probably like worse than criticizing someone's kids. It's like criticizing their writing. You know, it's, it feels very personal.
Because it is. I mean, these are very personal stories. Sometimes it's, I worked on this for 3, 4, 5 years and you're going to tell me that it has a problem. You're going to tell me maybe we are. We're going to tell you that it needs some help and some work, but, you know, rather find out now than, you know, when it's out there.
I imagine a lot of the folks that want to self-publish, you know, you see it all the time. It's like they put together kind of like a, you know, like a half-assed book, you know, and it's...
That's being generous.
Yeah, right. And maybe quarter-ass. And they're, yeah. You know, really just doing it to say, oh, look, I'm an author. You know, no one's actually supposed to buy this book. It's just supposed to say that I can write out a couple hundred pages about what I do. And it's like a proof validation point. How do you filter that out? You know, I mean, that's going to be a huge chunk of these self-published books.
Yeah. So, you know, the old saying, don't judge a book by the cover kind of a thing. I don't know if that's true. I think you absolutely should judge a book by the cover. And let me kind of just explain that a little bit and why. Because if you haven't put the effort into your cover, into your book, and making sure that it looks presentable, there's a 99% chance that your content inside hasn't had that same attention paid to it. If you look at a cover and if you don't know the genre and if it doesn't spark emotion, do you really think that somebody's paid attention to the interior and has spent hundreds, you know, maybe 100 or so hours really, or 200 writing and editing and making it worth it? It's easy to put lipstick on a pig. And if you haven't covered that step, I really doubt that the content's there. So, you know, I kind of went back to, yeah, let's judge a book by its cover, you know, and you can tell when somebody's put half effort in or whatever it is, you can tell.
I mean, straight from the publisher. That's great insight. So when people are going through this, like, what is the thing people like least expect about doing this? I gotta imagine they're like, oh yeah, like I'll go on tour and do all these book signings, and then they're like, oh no, the bookstores really care. Nobody's showing up. You know, like, how would you describe some of the things that people like least expect about the process?
I think people don't understand the amount of competition that's out there. You know, you're adding millions of books a year. You've got 30, 40, 50 million of them on Amazon. And it's just intense competition. And if you don't know where you fit in the marketplace, if you haven't done that from the very beginning, from the start, then you're in trouble. I think the second thing too that we worry about is we get people all the time coming to us saying, okay, I've written my book, I've got the cover ready, and now we're finally ready to think about marketing the book. And we just say, I'm sorry, there's not much that we can do to help you, because marketing starts at the very beginning. You know, when you get an editor, before you get an editor, you need to know where that book fits. You need to know who your audience is. You need to know who you're targeting. Your cover goes off that information as well. And so you've missed the boat. And I think that's one of the hardest things for authors to really get is, you know, you've got to tackle everything, you know, up front and have it all planned out. Because if you don't, well, there's 50 other million books out there and they'll find them before yours.
Well, I know you're a Harvard guy. One of our wonderful advisory board members here, David Wan, is he was the longtime chairman of Harvard Business Publishing.
He's amazing.
Yeah, David's fantastic.
I just met with him earlier this week, and him and him and I talk, and just to see where he thinks publishing is going, and it feels like we are on some of the same wavelengths, and I get excited. So I can't say enough about what he's done, where he's added to the world of publishing, and he fully understands where things are going. So wonderful person. I just got to put that out there first. Fan club, David Wan fan club president right here.
He was telling me about the move that he's seen a few authors do, which is before you even get close to launching is to play the pre-order game to perfection. And so he was doing like all kinds of, he said like the authors before it was even released would be doing like webinars and just all kinds, you know, get a free book or, you know, whatever, and getting all these pre-orders set for the launch date. So by the time it actually, you know, officially releases, they know exactly how many are going to sell, and it's going to put them, you know, on like the New York Times bestseller list. He's like, I've seen them do this several times. He's like, I wouldn't do it any other way. I was like, that's brilliant. There's kind of a balance here between like, is a book going to be expanding your audience, kind of telling a story, or is it almost like monetizing your audience? And I'm sure it's like a mix of both. You know what I mean? It's interesting.
Yeah. We usually, if somebody comes up to us and they say, hey, I want to publish a book and I know I'm going to make a lot of money on this, it's a project that we usually pass on. You know, because it's a telltale sign that hey, you're looking for a quick buck. It's just, it's not going to work. And so that's part of it. The other thing too, what's interesting, and this is where we run a little bit different model than, you know, Harvard Press, where we do print on demand. We do want to build that up. We do want to see pre-orders. But we're not in the inventory business at all, you know, and that's, I think, what's really helped us and our authors out is because they'll put the money into the production of the book. And then if it sells, you know, and if it has the pre-orders and everything works, well, this is great. I mean, we've had books that have made it on Fox News, and you'll see them sell 10,000 copies in the matter of 3 or 4 days. Well, how are you going to produce that? How do you want inventory on your shelf? And we don't. And so you've seen print on demand where, you know, one book is ordered. It looks just like every other book and every other online thing, but, you know, you're printing in that market. And so you're saving a lot just environmentally too. You're looking at Ace Disposal has a stat that says that, you know, they plan 25% of all hardbacks that major publishing houses print are, they say, hey, that's going to hit a landfill, you know? So you're incredibly inefficient and you're talking about all this waste. And if you have 25% of your product returned, you're looking at a 5% margin. I mean, you're just literally throwing away your money, but you can't plan. You have economies of scales. And so where we really feel like it's going is on that print on demand side of things. And we have print on demand partners in India. So you have it throughout the world and you print in that local market. And so even if you have a print book, it's still, you know, it's much better for the environment if you print on demand too, which is just a very interesting thing that we've kind of worked into the business model over the years.
I can't imagine that the price in the early days is going to be that big of a difference and the margin is going to cater, you know, that much. And why not test the market a little bit and see where, you know, where it's coming? Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm just trying to imagine just a haul, just landfills of unsold books is just hilarious to me. I mean, that's
yeah, right. you know, here probably in about 6 months, you're going to just see a whole landfill dedicated to Prince Harry and his spare book. You know? Who knows?
I heard the thing on like TikTok and whatnot, of like just like solid like 5 minutes about him like talking about his penis. They're like, this is a really strange book, man. I don't know what to tell you.
And what's funny is that when you have that kind of platform, a lot of these people hire ghostwriters. They sit down, they interview, and so
there's no way he wrote that.
Yeah, that's. I don't know, but I'm pretty sure, and I guess actually I did see an article saying that there was a ghostwriter there. But for many of these big people with the platform, you're not really hearing how they write. You're getting their story from an interview. A professional's coming through. They're doing it. They work their platform, and then boom, you sell a book. It's just that's where the money gets made. You know, if you already have it, you're just like, okay, here, write this book. Interview me for 8 hours and. Let's watch it go.
What kind of audience are the pros looking for to say, hey, I'll, you know, give me an advance, I'll front the ghostwriter, you know, we'll handle everything, just show up at the book site. I mean, how big of a deal do you have to be to get deals like that?
Yeah, you have to be a big deal. You know, I mean, you look at books by former presidents or current presidents, you know. They're just some of them are written okay, and some of them aren't. And some of them you just slap a name on, and it's like, okay, we're going to sell these things. You know, I a lot of people in the previous administration, they were saying, hey, I just from a literary perspective, these books weren't that great. You know, and so you have to be a really big deal with a huge platform. And that's why for common people who are really good at writing, it's hard to break into the market. We've got one gentleman who's just a phenomenal short story writer. He's just really good. He wrote a book called The Best Good Horse. Gets great rave reviews, but, you know, he doesn't have a following. You know, he's later on in life. But that's when you're 50, 55 and older, that's really when you kind of come into your sweet spot with writing. And if you don't have that platform, if you're not there, then you're missing a big part of the market. That's kind of what we see. I know that's a little curveball or, you know, going down a different path than what the question was, but you've really got to be a big deal in anything, you know, millions of followers, being able to sell a book, go on talk shows, you know, push that thing in order to make it happen. Even just mid-tier people, you know, we have motivational speakers that go out and do 200 events a year. And a lot of times, you know, their books don't sell through. So it's just
sold 200 books, right?
Yeah, you know, well, maybe 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, you know, books, but nothing, you know, 20,000, 30,000, 40,000, 50,000. It's just tough. So they're looking at this from a business decision, and this is where I think that the traditional model is just flawed, because you're out there and all you're doing is chasing these big time people. But let's say somebody comes to us and says, "Hey, you know, I'll front the money up front. I'll pay for this. I want to write it." Well, all of a sudden, instead of getting 8% to 12% of a royalty back, you know, they're making what, you know, the big publisher would. So technology is really going to make it much easier, much better for the common person to write and be able to do it well. And that's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. So you talked about that a little bit. So I imagine, you know, the Kindle self-publishing was a big moment. You know, are we in for kind of a similar deal? Are there other kind of events that, you know, make you excited about that world?
I think what's coming is that you're going to be able to use AI. And this is kind of where we're hoping to build our platform out, much like a doctor uses AI in cancer scanning and their work. It's going to be something that will help an editor find things. One of our biggest issues is authors tell, you know, we say, hey, show, don't tell. When you show somebody what's going on, it makes all the difference. You know, you just can't say, hey, I had a good time. You know, you've got to set the scene. That draws people in more. well, you're going to have AI that will go through and say, you know, here are the instances you might want to take a look at this or this or this. You know, sentiment. We have AI right now that we kind of gauge the flow of a book. You know, how, where does it, you know, are people worried? Are they happy? Are they mad? Is it positive? Is it negative? And then how does it compare to other books in that same genre? It really is going to be used as a tool to help people find issues and just make sure editors are getting everything. And we're still a little ways out from that happening. But I sure hope Izzard Inc.'s a part of that and how the development goes and where it goes in the future. It's going to be bright, and it's going to be less time spent on getting feedback and more time spent on actually writing and refining and getting a better story.
I think that's phenomenal. Not only can you do it at scale, maybe more accurately, TBD, but you know, also when you're dealing with clients, it's like, look, I'm not telling you this is what the AI is telling you. I think that's going to be fantastic. So I wonder how far away it is from like just a straight up like quality score. You're looking at sentiment analysis and flow of the book, I think is really interesting. You know, what else is it kind of picking up off currently?
I don't know if you're ever going to be able to, you know, score a book, because writing is so subjective. You know, it's always going to be an art and not a science, but you can use that science part to really craft it and make it better. I think it's really just going to take, and this is what we're trying to do. We're just making a huge all-in-one platform, because the same AI that will help with the manuscript is the same, you know, same platform that's going to help an author figure out where to sell it, what books are going, what trends are happening, you know, and where do you sell this to people who've already done it? How do you cross sell that? I think that's going to be an important part too. When you look at the PR side and when you hire a publicist, and just a lot of the effort goes to just, hey, send a message out, craft a pitch. Can this person go on this show or write this article? I think there's a lot of work that AI can do that will really help an author find their market much easier as well. And it will go back to the AI, not necessarily a scoring system. You know, editors will need to say how a book is, reviewers will need to say it, but the scientific part will also say, hey, you've shown and not told this many times, you know, you've got your books all over the place, you know, you're happy and sad all in the same paragraph, you know, or in the same sentence. It's just that kind of stuff. And it will flow. There'll be less holes. People will be, they'll be able to follow on a lot more. And that's going to be exciting.
Not only are you an interesting industry, you're also, you know, an entrepreneur and, you know, built a business here. Tell me a little bit about that. What has it been like building a business around this very interesting area of the world? What were some things, just as an owner, as an entrepreneur, you expected, didn't expect? I think you had kind of a passion for business all along. What were some of those surprises as you put this great business together?
Yeah, I didn't know how hard it would be. I didn't know what I didn't know about publishing. I sat there and I'm like, how hard can this industry be? You know, I've got this. It's just paper and ink, you know? And so I'm kind of glad I went into it like that, or else I never would have made it this far, you know? But yeah, let me just tell you, this was mostly started me being a stay-at-home dad, kind of changing diapers and going through and saying, hey, how can this work with that schedule? And I didn't know that we were prepared and making something that was, you know, COVID pandemic ready, but really it was cloud-based. I could work with anybody all over the world. So we have a team in Romania that does things, you know, on the tech side. And then we have, you know, back-end publishing side, a team in India. Well, they're all integrated into our platform. They're all working together. And so it was through some of those hardships, you know, that we really honed the business plan into something that just works. You know, it just does. And I've just got to get a shout out to the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business Program. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it is it is by far one of the best business programs anybody can take. So if you're a business owner, you've been in business for a couple of years, you've got some okay revenue, let's seek out the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business. It's sponsored by Goldman Sachs. It doesn't cost a business owner anything. A lot of times they're run by local community colleges in conjunction with Babson College, which is the top entrepreneurship college in the world. And it's really top notch. That's where I sat down and I said, okay, I really need to know my processes. I really need to have a vision. I need to have a business plan. And so where I had a business background, I knew it, you know, that was college. This was like a little mini MBA for my business. So I owe them a lot, you know, in what those instructors and what they taught. Was to that class that we ended up being the fifth fastest growing media company, according to Inc, you know, Inc 5, you know, the Inc 5000 list. And, so yeah, there are business programs out there. It might seem like a lonely world, but find people who are in your same tribe and go out and you guys are working to make business better all together.
Well, if you had to boil down some of the insights, you know, lessons that you learned there, you know, what kind of comes to mind?
It was really two. I think you learn about the people, you learn about who to hire and the tendencies and who to work with. And if you're not having fun, get them out. You know, if you don't have a good accountant that you get along with, you know,
what's the point?
Sometimes things just don't work. Yeah. What's the point? What's the point in going through this unless you can have fun with the people that you surround yourself with? And if you have passion for it, a lot of other things just fall into line.
What I typically like to ask folks as we're wrapping up here is talked a lot of kind of lessons learned, things we, you know, wish we knew back then. But is there anything that strikes you as kind of the one thing you wish you knew when you were first getting started? You know, is there one thing that you know now that you wish you knew back when you were just getting started?
I wish I would have understood how impactful this can be. You know, I thought of it as passive income right from the get-go. And I didn't know that if I sat there and if I learned an industry, if we were able to put things together, that this would actually have an impact on people and their lives. I don't want to sound morbid here, but it feels like sometimes we get authors that are just hanging on to finish their book. And we've had a couple of them 2 to 3 months after they're done pass away. And it just, it's fulfilling for me to know that there's stories out there. It's on with the Library of Congress. It's there. You have somebody who's lived, you know, 60, 70 years, and you were the last one to help them preserve and create their story. I didn't know that this could have such an impact on people. And that's what keeps us going. That's what keeps the editors going. That's what keeps the designers going. Is they want to be on the ground floor seeing this. They don't necessarily want to be in some corporation just printing money. They want to know that they're making a difference. And that's what I didn't understand at the very beginning.
That's beautiful, Tim. Well, sir, thank you so much for hopping on. I appreciate the time.
No, thank you. You guys do a great job. So thank you for having me. Much appreciated.
Hey, you listen, it's going down just like this.
This has been an Audley production. Thank you for tuning in. Have a lovely, lovely day. We'll see you next time.